Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
Welcome to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi playing with our headphones.
Yeah.
On the air with the Polish Pipe, I'm Jeff Orlowski.
Hello.
And joining us in studio, the prodigal son himself from RacingNation.com, John Wiedemann. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You bought your own headphones.
I did, yeah.
Well, give me those headphones over there.
All right.
We were playing,
headphone roulette. Like a quick driver change between the shows.
It is. And we're definitely not Team Penske in here. Let's try this.
We're about five laps down now.
At least.
So did anything happen this week in racing?
No. Boring Daytona 500, you know, no real news coming out of it.
How about that? We're going to talk about that. We got a big show coming in today. Of course, we're going to talk with Dennis Michelson from frontstretch.com. We're also going to talk to Eddie Lapine at the end of the hour, because there is a podcast. It's a podcast, but it's on video, too. Video/podcast with Nate Ryan. Did you guys see it?
No.
Did not.
See, I should have sent it to you guys. It is so good. I love Kyle Petty. I know he rubs some people the wrong way, but his filter is not as dense as the other filters on the people that cover NASCAR. So he kind of speaks his mind a little bit. He brought up some excellent points. I want to talk to that with Eddie later, because there's some interesting things. And we're all happy that Ryan Newman is walking around this week.
Yep.
But it was pretty scary. And there's some subjects that need to be just talked about. So we'll be talking about that in the first hour. Second hour, we're going to talk with Guy Hobbs, who I believe we had on the show many years ago. We're going to be talking IndyCar racing with Guy Hobbs. Looking forward to that. So, and then we have our three questions with Larry. We'll be doing that in the second half of the second hour. So, should be a lot of fun. Full show today. And Jeff, give me. Here's one thing. I thought it was interesting with everything, of course, that happened with the Newman crash and everything else. But I don't want to say it's fitting. But if one guy had a win and be totally ignored, who better than Denny Hamlin? I mean, that's not a rip against Denny Hamlin, but he won it last year. So he won it again. It's his third time he's won the race.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, okay, Denny Hamlin win. I mean, Denny Hamlin, okay, good guy, but he doesn't really move the fan meter at all. And so, I mean, if there is a better guy to win the race, a race like that, who better than Denny Hamlin?
Yeah, that's a good point. You're happy that it was Denny and not a first-time winner. Somebody who would, say it was Matt DiBenedetto or somebody
Or Ryan Blaney, who caused the crash, let's be honest.
Would deserve the full spotlight, and you'd feel bad for him because of a wreck that took away the spotlight from an amazing Daytona 500 win. That being said, the Newman crash, I don't blame any of the drivers.
No.
It's on NASCAR. This is what they want with the restrictor plates. You used to have the plates where they would run, the high line, the low line, and you'd be side by side. Half the time you'd be three wide for 200 laps. And then they got away from that. They tried a year or two of the tandem racing. They didn't like that. And so now we're in the manufacturer racing. And where all the Chevys line up together, all the Fords, all the Toyotas, they all are on their own strategy, doing their own thing until the end, and all hell breaks loose. This is what NASCAR has designed for themselves on these super speedways. And, Daytona 500, Great American Race, I thought, the pre-race was way too long. The race started too late. It was very cool, with Trump there and everything like that. I don't care what your party affiliation is. To have the president there and all that was very, very cool and a hell of a moment. But, this is what NASCAR, this is what they wanted. And, they're going to end up paying a price because they got lucky, that less than two full days after it happened, Newman walked himself out of the hospital.
John?
Yeah, they're pushing this every single time. Every single race, every single super speedway plate race ends the same. They race all this time. They may have a big wreck in between or something like that. But once they get to the end, it takes forever to finish the race. Two cars spin out. They throw a caution. It takes 20 minutes for them to get going again. They bunch up, and half lap later, there's two more cars spinning out wrecking. And then you have, this type of finish. And I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy plate racing at all. I don't want to see that type of thing. I don't want to be hitting Twitter all night to seeing what's going on with a driver. When you have an incident like this, I don't want that. I don't want Ryan Newman to ever race again, because the win was a picture of him walking out of the hospital with his two daughters. That's the win. He never needs to race again, as far as I'm concerned. There's no checkered flag that's going to be better than that. And I don't want to see my drivers, I don't care if I like them or not, whoever it is, I don't want to see drivers in a sport that I'm watching be in this type of situation. I know if I talk to Steve way, way back, it used to be drivers getting killed and stuff all the time, but it's not that way anymore. So let's not push it. Let's not have just these dumb take forever finishes in plate racing. I don't really need to watch plate races anymore.
Before the accident, I'm following the race on Twitter and doing all the stuff that you do nowadays when you watch a race. And it was a cute little meme of a restrictor plate racing timeline. There's a graph there, let's say 1 to 10, and 1 to 5 is the first 90% of the race. And then 6 through 10 is the last 10% of the race, because that's the restrictor plate racing timeline. Yeah. John's right. I mean, it's, it's like you better extend that when you're, if you're taping it, don't do the, you know, 30 minutes over. You better do the 1 hour or one,
the 3 hours.
Cause this thing could get, you know, could get hairy. And yeah, it's frustrating. And I've said, you know, I said on the show last year, I said, you know, if they're not careful, they're going to kill a guy, and how it's going to happen is going to be a car upside down and another car coming. And when I saw that, I was like, there's a part of me that wish I didn't say that, but there's a part of me that wants to say, I told you so. You guys can't be just, you know, this is when you're racing guys, you know, Daytona, Talladega, you're racing 200 miles an hour. And, you know, they talk about Michigan, you know, they're going 210, but then they're slowing down when they're going into the turns a little bit. But the Daytona, Talladega, you're at that constant maximum velocity that they had set.
Right.
It's like, you know, they have not addressed it. But I want to talk. We'll talk more about the restrictor play racing in the second half of this first hour. But yeah, there's a lot of layers to this onion. And, you know, you see NASCAR. I'll just tease a little bit. Kyle Petty brought up an interesting point. It can't be just NASCAR saying this, though. It has to be. There's three parts. It's the drivers, owners, and NASCAR. And I want to play the I'll find it on the thing. I sent you the link. We'll play it in the second half of this first hour, this little tidbit where he talks about that. It makes a lot of sense because, you know, and there's so many things he brought up. I mean, first of all, like with the cars, you know, 10 years ago, they had Daytona USA. And whenever they would talk to the guy at July, you know, he'd say, oh, I wish I had that car from because that was that's our good restrictor play car. Cause it's all clean. They don't say that anymore because by the time they cross the finish line, they're all bashed up from slamming into each other for 200 laps. You know, so I mean, something needs to be done now. We'll see what happens, but let's take a quick break here. We're going to talk more coming up on the Final Inspection Show. Big show today. We're going to be talking Vegas. We'll be talking Daytona. We'll be talking Ryan Newman. We'll be talking some IndyCar stuff and a lot more coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Jeff Orlowski, and joining us in studio, John Wiedemann from RacingNation.com. I'm Steve Zotke. So we're in Vegas this weekend, and the number six car, Roush Fenway car, has a new driver. And who is it? Well, it's the guy who thought he was playing iRacing last week at Daytona. Yes, Ross Chastain, I made a post on Facebook. I said, I've seen kamikaze pilots make better moves than that. I mean, to make a move like that and take out, you know, how many cars he took out, I guess it's frustrating for somebody like me, and not only me, but I always bring up, you know, for us in the upper Midwest, our racing up here is different from where it is down south. You know, we were raised on the, even though he's from Arkansas, Mark Martins, the Alan Kowickis, the, you know, the Dick Trickles who raced clean. They made a pass. They didn't just crash into people. Whereas down south, it's a rougher way. And, you know, it's generally known because a lot of those guys worked on their own cars. So if they wrecked it, they had to fix it. So Ted Musgraves, another one, you know.
And you know who races dirty? Let me tell you this. And he's joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, the dirtiest driver I know, Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Man, what's happened to this show that I used to host with Summer Santana? What has happened? You two guys have become old.
Yeah.
I mean old. Zocchi and Wiedemann, the old couple. What in the world was I just listening to? Oh, we don't want restrictor plate races. They go too fast. Somebody may die.
No, we're not saying that. We're saying that it's how they race it.
I understand.
You got to show a little bit of respect for the drivers.
I get it. I understand. Listen, as soon as those tracks stop getting ratings, then you'll stop seeing them. As long as those tracks are still must-see races for the casual fan, they're not going anywhere. You could argue they probably should add more to the schedule than get rid of them at the end of the day. Remember back when we were talking about the schedule and we were talking about, well, we should open in Daytona and end in Daytona. And the only reason that we've agreed that they shouldn't end in Daytona is because it's kind of a crapshoot because of all the wrecks and everything else. But from NASCAR's standpoint, they can't be getting rid of restrictor plate races and going away with that. What are you going to do, add more boring road course races for everybody to fall asleep watching in the afternoon? I mean, that to me, it's just, there's just no way. Now, look, the Ryan Newman thing, yes, I was scared. I thought he was dead, too, like everybody else, no doubt. But that is how you're going to, that's how it's going to be sold. That's how it's going to work. People watch NASCAR, the people that aren't diehard NASCAR fans like you two guys, watch it for the wrecks. That's what they watch it for. And if there aren't wrecks and something going on, they get bored, turn it off, make fun of the sport, and never come back. That's just the truth of the situation right now with how that sport is viewed, I think, from everybody.
All right, Sparky, I get that's the exciting thing of it, but that's not what I want to see. I want to see racing, and that isn't racing. I want to follow certain drivers, and you can have your driver taken out in like lap five by no fault of his own. It's not racing. I don't see the guys just – it's basically a roulette wheel, and either your time is up or it's not. And for Newman, his time was almost up this time.
No, I got
it. That's exactly what it is, and that's why people
Sparky.
Want. That's exactly what it is.
Two of the most iconic finishes in the Daytona 500 is 1976 and 1979. 1976, you have Pearson and Petty, two of the legends in racing, battling mano a mano. There wasn't a pack behind them, so when those two guys crashed, they just went into the infield. They didn't get drop kicked by somebody. The second one is, of course, 1979. You got Kelly Yarbrough and Donnie Allison fighting at it, and the same thing. There are two guys fighting mano a mano. People want to see close racing, but we don't necessarily have to see 30 cars packed up. We can have four, or five cars. They were kind of spread out a little bit at the end there. But
remember, we used to have packs of two racing with each other. That's how we solved the pack race.
That was dumb too.
We're just going to draft. Everybody's going to go in pairs, and that's how we're going to try and get around this place. And that ended up being a fiasco. Nobody wanted to watch that. So back we go. We're going to add extra 100 horsepower and see what happens. Well, you saw what happened. And NASCAR was talked about for 2-3 days. Now, positively, probably not necessarily positively because of what happened to Ryan Newman. It turned out to be okay because, as John pointed out, Ryan Newman walks out of the hospital with his two kids and everything is fine. All I'm saying is I get what you guys are saying. I get it. Like, you don't want to see anybody die or anything like that. But the roulette aspect of how long will my driver survive? How far can my driver get? Can he be one of the last five or six standing? That whole aspect, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, is why those TV ratings are normally higher than most of the other races.
No, those TV ratings are high because those fans are expecting to see somebody die. That's what they're looking for.
No, I don't think anybody's expecting to see anybody die. I don't think that's it. I think people are tuning in to see the big wreck. 10, 15 cars are involved in a wreck, and there's stuff flying all over the place. That's what they're tuning in to see. I don't think anybody tunes in to the Daytona 500 going, boy, I hope I see somebody die today. I don't think that's what it is at all. But they are tuning in to see wrecks, without question. And those races where you don't have wrecks and you're just driving around in circles for 3 hours, those are the races that a lot of those fans could care less about.
But as a series, that's not sustainable if you're wrecking cars constantly and guys are getting hurt.
True. Who got hurt in that race outside of Newman?
Well, it looks like Newman didn't get hurt either, so.
Yeah.
Right. Because of the safety of the cars. And the reason all those people died back in the day that we were talking about was because they didn't have all the safety involved today. And, in fact, I tweeted out after that Newman incident and said, if it wasn't for Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s death, he's probably dead right now. Because you didn't have all these huge safety advancements like they've had here in the past decade or so. it was only happened because of the senior death. If Dale Earnhardt Sr. was still alive and that did not happen, I don't believe safety would be anywhere close to where it is today, and Ryan Newman probably would have died.
Well, what's interesting is about 9 years ago, Ryan got into a wreck at Talladega, and once again, a car almost got into the cockpit, and they added what they call the Newman bar, and that's right. Probably what saved them in this case.
Yep, that's another good point. Absolutely. All right, boys, that was fun. I just wanted to call and check in because you had me all fired up listening.
Miss talking to you.
You're always welcome on your show.
No, not my show.
I know.
Final inspection. It was our show with Summer, yes. Myself, and Saki and Wiedemann, and then Orlovsky came in and kicked us all to the curb so we could get
some. Yeah, blame me.
It was all Orlovsky's fault. All right, boys, have a good one.
All right, thank you. And that was Sparky on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
So, Jeff, is Ford sending a good message by rewarding Ross Chastain by putting him in the sixth car? Or is there just nobody else they want to put in that car other than him at this point?
You know, I think there's nobody else that they want to put in. You know, he's done well in the lesser series, and this gives him some experience. So, you know, it seems like he's going to be one of the next man up in the Ford camp. So you might as well get him some laps. You know, whether what he does is.
Did you see that move at Daytona? How bad was that move?
It was bad.
That was an iRacing move.
Yeah.
I think all of us have made you'll know as a NASCAR Thunder and that and those other games. That's the kind of move you make.
A lot of times on purpose.
Right, yeah. If you get spun out by somebody, you're mad, you're trying to make your way through, and you're just, I'm going to just take out guys now. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad, but, you know, who else are you going to put in there?
Well, you know, I was thinking, who are they going to put in a six car? And to be honest, there wasn't no excellent opportunity for driver X. There
right.
wasn't nobody like that.
Right. You know, they're scraping. They're not at the bottom of the barrel because they still have him, but they're pretty damn close.
John, what do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, these kids, you kind of brought it up before, they don't work on their own cars, and they probably haven't their whole entire career. You know, maybe first when they're running karting, they were putting wheels on or something like that. But, you know, there isn't that respect for the machine. There isn't that respect. They maybe don't even understand how the whole thing works. They just hop in, put the helmet on, and go. And that's how they learn is iRacing. That's all they do. And they crash and they just hit reset and go again, you know, kind of thing. And they're all trying to quickly make a name for themselves. So they are going to make bold moves at the wrong time. You know, because they're just trying to get that win, trying to do whatever it takes to do that. And I don't care about the results unless I can get that win and do it that way. So I think it's just there's no working your way up anymore. It's get yourself seen, get yourself in that ride, which he actually did this weekend. And this could actually propel him, you know, otherwise you're forgotten. I mean, we could just go through the names of where's Dylan? What is it? What's Steve's name? Dylan
Kowalkowski, that guy?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, they brought him up as a past winner. It's like, where is he now? You know, there's a whole bunch of kids.
There's a guy who does YouTube videos, who does NASCAR busts.
Yeah.
And some of them are kind of, I wouldn't really particularly call this guy a bust. It just didn't work out or whatever for whatever reason. But he's on there, and there's a few others. I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot. Forgot about
exactly.
I always wanted to do a thing on the trash heap of driver developmental drivers that was occurring in the late 90s, in the early 2000s, and into the teens, and it was just a trash heap, and it was really a sad situation because usually what happened is you had a young and up and coming driver coming up through whether it was late models. Or on the USAC side with the USAC midgets and sprint cars and that, they have signed, you know, especially Chip Ganassi was good at, just sign this guy, lock this guy into a two or three-year contract at a decent amount of money, and then it would just sit. And then they give the guy like five or six stock car races a year. That's not a way to develop a driver.
Right.
And I've always said the biggest problem with a lot of these guys, especially on the open wheel side, they don't have enough track time. They're you know, I always said this, the biggest problem with Marco Andretti is that he just never got behind the wheel enough. You know, you look at somebody like Larson or Christopher Bell and these guys are racing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you need that track time.
Well, yeah, and you got, you know, NASCAR eliminating practice, you know, at different tracks all over. You know, you can't go and test anymore anywhere. So, you know, they keep limiting it even more. So these guys are even more green, you know, along with not working on their own car and not being responsible for fixing some of their own mess when they cause stupid wrecks. As the purse strings start to tighten in NASCAR, and as we get this next TV deal that's going to just completely chop their legs out from underneath them money-wise, I would not be surprised if new drivers start to have, like, penalties where if you sit there and cause a blatant, obvious wreck that's your fault, Juan Pablo Montoya running into the jet dryer, you know, something like that, where you're going to be docked, you know, 5 or 10% of your pay to help cover the cost of the car. Because as much as NASCAR says they're trying to save these teams money, every year the price of the car goes up and up and up and up and up and up. And so, you know, until they start putting either financial, restrictions on these guys, where these guys are going to have to start divvying up and you know, pitching in towards the price of the car, or until, you know, these teams wake up and say, you know, grab a wrench or a hammer and beat this dent out, not a lot's going to change. Because like you said, you know, you get in a wreck, the iRacing guys, you hit reset. You're on the track, you get in a wreck. Oh, well, we'll get him next week. I'll have a brand new car then.
That's a good point. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk to Dennis Michelson from frontstretch.com and talk more NASCAR coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure you get your 2020 season passes now at GreatLakesDragway.com and along with their Facebook page, Great Lakes Dragway, for one of the best deals in racing. So get your 2020 season pass now. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from FrontStretch.com, it is Dennis Michelson. Welcome to the show, sir.
I am happy to be here, Mr. Zotke, because we're not talking about a memorial for a driver this week. And I was so worried on Monday afternoon that might be what this segment was all about.
Well, I want to, there's another a component of it that I want to talk about. And how can I say this? I understand the rules with releasing medical information and whatnot, but it was really surreal because the information was so slow to leak out and no information, not even, well, he's breathing, he's not, you know, nothing. And just what's your opinion of that, or what feedback can you give us on that? Because we've both been at tracks where the worst has happened, I think, and there's certain protocols that are followed. I know we had a dreaded folder at the Milwaukee Mile in case something happened. There's protocols you follow. People have to be notified, this and that. Now, you know, it was very, very surreal Monday night. Dennis, what's your feedback on that?
Yeah, anytime there is a serious wreck at the track, you go based on worst case scenario at first when the driver is not responsive. And I think that's what this was all about. But the first report that we've got, it was like people didn't want to hear the best of what it was. When it was said serious but not life-threatening injuries, how many people were sitting there going, yeah, right? You know, it's almost like we were in denial that we were getting good news because we saw the dreaded black screens go up.
But that's not necessarily, I mean, yes, he's not dead. But that could mean a lot of things, too. Is he paralyzed?
Oh, absolutely.
Is he, absolutely. I mean, how bad is it? I mean, there could be a lot, all that says is there's a heartbeat. That's it.
Yeah, and you start jumping to conclusions yourself because you start thinking of a Robert Wickens or a Jerry Nadeau or a Steve Park. And then when less than 2 days later, you see this man walking out on his own power with his kids in sock feet, which, of course, you know, was just done to throw a jab at Chuck Norris. I'm convinced of that. You know, you've got this situation where you go, what in the heck am I watching here? I was stunned because while I understood he was not going to die, I am absolutely shocked and pleased and thrilled that he doesn't appear to have any serious injury that he's going to take forward from this day forward. Of course, we do understand the dangers of concussion and CTE and all these other things that can manifest themselves down the road. We've lived that with Dale Earnhardt Jr. recently. So we know that while all the news is great right now, that we're going to just keep our fingers crossed and keep, you know, on our knees praying, you know, and that's the other thing is you know, there's almost this divine intervention. It wasn't your time to go type of craziness. When you look at the intensity of that wreck, for him to walk out of the hospital 2 days later, it just says so much about, you know, we're always complaining about NASCAR is not doing enough on this. They didn't do enough on this. They didn't do enough on that. That was the whole thing back in 2000 when we lost Kenny Irwin Jr. and Adam Petty within 6 weeks, that NASCAR wasn't doing enough. They weren't doing enough. All of a sudden, after 2001, when Earnhardt died, they caught religion in a big way. They were already working on stuff, but it was going too slow. Now all of a sudden, you lose your biggest star. You go on fast forward of changing things in a hurry, but only because you're changing them in the right direction. And they got back to the NASCAR of old, where if there's an incident, if there's a problem, we re-engineer a change to the car to make sure that problems can't happen. And ironically, the man that was involved, Ryan Newman, his idea or his accident led to the Newman bar, which was even his suggestion, that may have even saved Corey LaJoie's life, which is the other thing in this that we're not even thinking of. We have gotten so complacent in NASCAR racing that nothing bad can happen. This kind of let us know that maybe it still can. And then it fast forwards 2 days later and says, yeah, this racing is pretty safe. You know, it's safer than we even thought. So it's kind of interesting. Right after the incident, we heard a lot about we need to change the rule package. We need to do this. We need to get rid of plate racing or this type of racing. It's not technically plate racing anymore. It's like a tapered spacer. But the problem is the same. You don't let drivers finish a pass. And unfortunately, you've made rule packages at the mile-and-a-half tracks that also take away the ability to finish a pass, which sets you up for more wicked accidents just at 160 to 175 miles an hour you know, rather than at 200.
Did you see the Nate Ryan Kyle Petty interview earlier this week?
No, I missed that.
Okay. Jeff, is that ready?
Yeah, I've got it queued up here, Steve.
All right. He brings up an interesting point here. Let's listen to Kyle Petty for a second here.
2 dozen people. Is there a selective memory among people in the NASCAR industry, do you think? And like you said, maybe you kind of close these things off and you don't think about them again until it's in your face.
Well, happening again. I say this, and I've said this before, so this is, drivers are strange people anyhow. And you always think it's going to happen to somebody else. It's never going to happen to you. And even if we go back to Adam and to Kenny Irwin and Tony Roper, and then ultimately Dale Sr., and I was Adam's father, but you came up with excuses that made it okay for you.
You have to rationalize
it. Yeah. That wouldn't, you know, I would never let that happen, or that's not going to happen, or I hate that happening, or this was not, you know, that you just, whatever it is, you just do. And then you get into a situation where so many times, and you know, we see, and we talked about, you see Brendan Gaughan flip down the backstretch, land on his wheels, and then they do an interview with him, and they're all laughing and joking about it.
Right.
And you know, if we really look at it, and you talk about Nadeau, and you talk about Kyle Busch's wreck at Daytona.
Right.
You know, hitting the inside wall, and then they come back and they fix that. So then, boom, it's out of your head again. You know what I mean? So it's that. But we've really had more fans injured than we have drivers when you look at some of the situations that we've had. So from this side of the fence, from the garage area side of the fence, you begin to say, yeah, we're all invincible.
All right. Dennis, reaction on that?
He couldn't have said it. I couldn't say it any better than he did. And this goes back way back into the 60s and 70s when you would read about a driver dying like once a month in National Speed Sport News. And you still have that same mentality of it's not going to happen to my guy. It's not going to happen to me. These guys are supermen. Bad things happen at the track, and all you can ever do is to keep evolving the vehicle and the safety equipment. Thank God for Bill Simpson, Jim Downing, and guys like that, and Gene Seeking, who have come up with these amazing things that make a crazy dangerous sport somewhat less dangerous, but it'll always be an inherently dangerous sport, and we always have to expect the worst.
All right, here's one more cut I want to play, Dennis.
Well, if they are,
it's definitely understandable. But listen, I'm not criticizing any kid that drives and has that attitude. I'm not. But it's almost like, and this will show my age. It's almost like they believe they're in they're iRacers. They believe they're in a video game. You know what I mean? And they believe, I mean, not a total criticism, but Ross Chastain, that move he made going into turn one, that's video game material right there, dude.
Right.
You don't run down across the flat and back up into the lead of the Daytona 500. Just doesn't happen, okay? So when you look at it, they are flipping about it. But here's what happens too. And I think we talked about this, you know, is I push you and then you push me. And you know what? Everything's good. Next time I push you a little harder. Next time you push me a little harder. We bump a little harder. We get a little bit more aggressive. And you just keep going and going and going. And there's no check, because every time we go, nobody gets hurt. No harm, no foul. No harm, no foul. No harm, no foul. No harm, no foul. And then all of a sudden, we have something like this. Now, do we learn from this? Or do we just go to Talladega in another 3 or 4 months and say, whew, dodged one at Daytona.
Right.
You know, we're good for another 15 or 20 years.
Dennis, is that the situation we're in right now?
Yeah, I do believe so. These drivers of today have not buried enough of their fellow drivers to have as much fear and respect for the danger of the sport. However, if you think about the 1976 Daytona 500 finish or the 79 finish, we had guys take each other out in a dangerous way back then, and those guys were used to burying their friends several times a year. So some of it is this modern knowledge of I'm safe in my cocoon, I can do crazy things. But the other is the driver mentality that's always been there. I'm going to beat you no matter what it takes on that last lap or in this key situation. And that's what leads to a lot of mayhem as well.
All right, Dennis, we certainly appreciate it. What's the latest at frontstretch.com and D-Mike Media?
Oh, enjoying doing the power rankings over at Front Stretch. Anytime anybody gives me the ability to be snarky, I'm enjoying it. D-Mike Media side of things, I'm loving producing this new podcast, working on the first edition to make sure it's perfect when it comes out next week for Speed Sport, my friends over there at Race Monitor, and also on the home front here. You know, what a life. I go enjoy ice racing with motorcycles, ATVs, and go-karts last night, and I'll be at the arena calling hockey tonight and getting paid for doing these crazy things. You know, I think I got a pretty lucky life going on, guys. So having a good time. And, of course, love visiting with you guys on Saturdays here on the Final Inspection. It was great hearing Sparky Pfeiffer again, too, today.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Eddie Lapine from RacingNation.com coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. In studio with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, along with John Wiedemann from RacingNation.com, and joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, Eddie Lapine, also from RacingNation.com. Eddie, how are you doing today?
Talk to John today, huh?
Yes, you get to talk to John.
What's up, Eddie?
We're going to continue, Eddie. We've been playing some excerpts that I thought were excellent. Observations by Kyle Petty on Nate Ryan's podcast on the NBC Sports Network. And I want to play one more thing here, and if you guys want to listen to it, and then we'll react right after this.
My granddad didn't like the way that my dad and Pearson and Baker and all those guys came along in the 60s. Didn't like the way those young guys raced. Those guys, they didn't like the way Earnhardt and Terry Labonte and Rusty Wallace and Mark Martin.
Right.
And those guys probably wouldn't like the way that some of these guys race today. It's just, that's evolution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not a knock. That's just evolution. At the same time, there has to be some checks and balances to say, this is over the line. You know, we need to back this up. We're going to Daytona and we're not going to bump draft. We're not going to touch each other. We've got to figure something out.
Commonplace is a good word, because this was striking to me today. Corey LaJoie was driving the car that hit Ryan Newman while he was upside down, and it would seem might have put him in a bad spot that led to him going to the hospital. This was Corey LaJoie. I want to get your take on this. He did an interview today on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, and he said this: I'm comfortable. It's what you sign up for. I think it's a testament to what NASCAR is learning and trying to keep these cars safe, because that was the worst angle of a crash, the worst area of a car to get hit on Monday night, the way Ryan Newman was. And for him to be literally walking out 36 hours later, why would we change what many would consider the best form of racing that we have? In my opinion, we don't change a thing. We just keep learning from these wild crashes, especially with the next new next-gen car coming in. Those cars are 30 to 40% safer than this. I'm excited to get into that car and continue to put on a great show for the France. That's Corey LaJoie talking, and he was in the middle of this accident. And
okay, so
that's striking to me.
And it's striking to me because of this. Okay, and I will say, it is. If I look at, and here's the thing, that's youth and testosterone talking in a lot of ways. Saying the things that he thinks other drivers want to hear and the fans want to hear. We know that we sign up for it. That's the biggest line ever, okay? We sign up for this. We know what it is. We know when we get in that car what we do, what we sign up for. I knew getting in a car and going out and racing and watching people have accidents and fatalities coming up and being with my dad, that's a distinct possibility. I lived with it as a kid, knowing your dad might not come back, you know? So that is that's part of it. So you know that can happen to you, okay? You never think about being a part of somebody else, being in an accident where somebody else, that happens to somebody else. I'm not sure I could handle that, okay? And I think you know, that's 180 degrees from the attitude and the comments he had post-race, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the question is, you want to go back and say, okay, Ryan doesn't come out of the hospital. Now, is that what you signed up for? Ryan doesn't come out of the hospital. Do you think this is the best racing in the world? Ryan doesn't come out of the hospital. Do you think that car really is 30 or 40% safer? You know what I mean? And can you go out and perform? You know, could a Ryan Blaney go out and perform the same way this weekend if that had been a fatality? And my answer is going to be no.
All right, Eddie Lapine joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. What's your thoughts on Kyle Petty's remarks there?
Well, I think it really bodes well for the way the sport has changed, because I remember when I first started covering racing and, you know, how dangerous it was back then when they were going the speeds. And now we're, you know, fast forwarding 30 years later, and NASCAR is trying to give the fans what they want, and that's the pack racing. And I don't think it's the best thing for the sport. One thing that I've concerned myself with, what happens if a car goes in the stands?
Yes.
That would be my biggest fear. And when you see how high Ryan Newman went, and if it was hit on another angle and the car went into the stands, the greatest racing would be over with instantly. And that's my concern, that they're not looking. They're looking at great racing, and it's safe. And Kyle is exactly right. These guys would have been affected a different way if he was in a coma. And when you saw his post-race interview, it was totally different than what this podcast is reflecting. And, you know, I mean, I've raced with people over the years, too, and I've lost friends racing. And it does affect you. And, you know, you can try to cover it up with testosterone and say that's just part of the sport. But reality is it's going to affect you in certain ways.
John, what do you
think?
That's
my take on it.
It's just this pack racing. I mean, I just don't like the pack racing. And
have they been lucky? Has NASCAR been lucky?
Well, I mean,
are they just, is it Russian roulette? I mean, because I thought after the Austin Dillon crash, which was scary.
Yeah.
Not only for Austin Dillon.
Right.
But the fans.
Yeah, because a lot went through
there. And Kyle Petty later in the podcast mentioned, you know, there's more fans have been injured than drivers lately. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden we're not talking about the car getting up in the air before. We used to be talking about that to put the roof flaps on and stuff like that. They're not talking about the cars getting up in the air anymore.
And that's kind of two different things, because the cars are safer from an aero point of view. Those are physics. Physics and velocity is what's putting those cars. And you can, all the aero you want isn't going to, flaps and everything. If you have a car going at a certain velocity, another car hits at a certain angle, it's going to go in that direction. So you can't stop that. But yeah, it's, and I mentioned, you know, with Sparky earlier on the show, with 76 and 79, those cars, they wrecked and whatnot, but you didn't have that second car. And that's where the issue is coming in. Same thing with Austin Dillon.
Right.
Same thing with Carl Edwards at Talladega. Cars will get in the air, this and that. Cars will hit the wall, fine. But it's that second hit that's so dangerous.
And that's the thing. It's not the speed. It's not the pack. It's the pack at speed.
Yep.
Where there's no time to do anything. You can have these big wrecks at Bristol. They're not going fast enough to have this happen. The drivers are in a cocoon. They are safe inside the car. And this has proved that, yes, these cars are safe, and then the new cars are supposed to be safer and everything because of the cocoon. But multiple hits from these cars coming in this pack with no time, that's, I think, the problem.
Jeff?
Yeah, I agree. The pack racing, you know, the second hit is definitely a big part of it. My problem with the plate racing, tapered spacer, whatever the hell you want to call it, there's no driver talent in there. You just pedal to the metal, and you keep your fingers crossed. And I would like to see the best car, the best driver, as long as it's not Kyle Busch every single week, you know, take home the checkered flag, and that's just not what you get now.
Eddie, what says you?
Well, I think if Ryan Newman looked at the tape later, if he would have just stayed there, he would have got pushed across the finish line and probably won the race. So, I mean, they have to make a split decision in the pack racing. And when those split decisions are the wrong way, this is the end result. And when you take a car and it's jeopardized on the first blow, and then it's sitting out there and you have 30 more cars coming, you're opening yourself up to getting hit. And if you look in the past, that's when most of the damage is done to somebody, as in, you know, having somebody killed.
Jeff?
When it's hit the second time, or injured permanently. You know, I mean, that's inevitable. When that car is exposed and it's sitting out there and it gets hit by the 30-place car, and it can happen. And, I mean, I think, I mean, and if you talk to everybody, I mean, like Kyle, what he said about this, they need to reevaluate this. The fans want pack racing. You know, and a lot of fans don't want stage racing, but they're still doing it. And they need to look at the big picture. And I'll go back to what I said before. When if something happens where one of these cars goes in the stand, remember when Petty flipped along the front stretch? You know, what was it, like 10 or 15 times and tore the whole fence down? And, I mean, once... And they have done amazing things to make everything safer for the fans. But you just said that fans are getting hurt, and fans should not get hurt at a race. They're there to watch, not to go to the hospital.
Well, let's switch gears, Eddie. You have a very busy March coming up. Tell us what's coming up next on RacingNation.com, and when you'll be signing in the next couple weeks here.
Well, we got Amelia Island, where Roger Penske is going to be honored, and it's the 25th anniversary of Amelia Island. And it's, I mean, Bill Warner and his amazing cast of characters have done, I mean, in an unbelievable job the last few years, but I think they're going to take it to a new level. I'm told that there's going to be 30 Penske cars there. And that,
awesome,
to me is, yeah. I mean, and then the following week is St. Pete, and then we head to Sebring.
Wow.
And it's a busy month.
Spring is in the air, Eddie. We certainly appreciate everything you do, and make sure to check out his stuff along with Jack Webster's great photography at RacingNation.com. Eddie, we look forward to chatting with you again in the upcoming weeks.
Thanks a lot, guys. You have a great weekend.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to talk some more racing on the Final Inspection Show coming up next.
Start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And hey, welcome to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zotke along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski in studio, and John Wiedemann from RacingNation.com. And make sure you check out GreatLakesDragway.com online for their 2020 season passes, where you can get them now. One of the best buys in racing. Also, check them out on Facebook at the Great Lakes Dragway on Facebook, and you can also, there should be a link on there also that will direct you to their gift shop and get those 2020 season passes. Good all year long. And also you can check us out also, TFI, The Final Inspection Show on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Me, you can follow Steve Zautke, Zautke. And Jeff, how do we follow you?
Jeff underscore Orlowski, no W, O-R-L-O-S-K-I.
And John?
Pretty much just check out RacingNation.com.
There you go. Yep. I like that. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, a man who is underground when it comes to social media, but we don't mind. It is Guy Hobbs, who is our IndyCar expert. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Well, thank you. Glad to be a part of it.
So,
and you're right, I am underground.
Underground. And it's only 22 days until the season opener in St. Pete. And the cars this year are certainly going to look a bit different, aren't they?
They're certainly going to look a little different. And they certainly sound a little different. However, I think the show is also going to be different and will be very exciting.
So when with St. Pete coming up and Indy, I think one of the best things that happened in IndyCar last year was everything was consolidated onto one broadcast network, that's NBC, and they're setting up once again for expanded coverage. One thing I always enjoyed, going back to, if you want to call it the heyday for many in when it comes to IndyCar and karting, was coming home after work on a weekday and watching ESPN and their daily coverage at Indianapolis. And that's, you can do that once again with the NBC Gold Package with online. And the online content and expanded coverage has certainly changed the world of auto racing and motorsports. You can pretty much check out anything you want, can't you, Guy?
It certainly can online. And, of course, all the drivers in particular now, they're all so accessible to, I mean, before, if you wanted to talk to somebody or get a word with any driver, you had to set it up a day ahead of time, and then they maybe if they had time, they would talk to you. Now, of course, they're all wide open, and they're all texting and emailing and online and Twittering the entire time. So, I mean, you can pretty much talk to anybody you want any time now. And they're all open. The great thing about the I know this happened years and years ago, is they had a meeting with all the drivers, it must be 15 years ago, and they said, you need to make yourselves much more accessible to the media if you're going to get any kind of recognition or acknowledgement. And that's certainly something IndyCar has addressed, and they've done it very well. And you see people on there all the time. I get Twitter messages nonstop from I've had to ask them to stop sending them to me.
And one of those guys who's done a very good job of that is James Hinchcliffe, and he picked up a ride this year with Andretti Autosport, didn't he?
Yes, I think he's doing he's doing Indianapolis, and I think he's doing just the road courses. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I also, I just read somewhere yesterday, I think someone's picked up a deal to do just the oval courses.
So,
but I need to check in on that. It was a quick read. Well, I'm in Elkhart Lake, so everything's quick.
How's the weather up there today?
Well, it's lovely. It's one of those fake days when you look out the window and you go, gosh, look at that blue sky and lovely sunny weather. And then you look at the people walking by in their hats, coats, earmuffs, and snow sleds as they go by.
You know,
I can actually hear a lot of, there's some kind of snowmobile event going on at the Sheboygan Marsh this weekend, and I can hear them racing out there too. So
I'm in a semi-rural area. You hear the droning of the snowmobile engines in the distance. So I'm a fan of The Odd Couple. I love the movie, and I love the old series with Felix and Oscar. Is there more of an Odd Couple guy in IndyCar than Sebastian Bourdais and AJ Foyt?
I can't think of one. Although, actually, AJ Foyt did, I'm trying to think who it was now, but a number of years ago, Same thing. He had, I think it was another French driver drive for him. And at the time, everybody was like, this is just not going to work. And sure enough, it didn't work. But no, I can't imagine two completely different personalities, characters, and, you know, AJ, of course, being from ovals and USAC and American racing and everything. And Sebastian Bourdais coming in, speaking French, having snails for dinner after. AJ's got to look at him and go, weirdo. But he's quick. But, of course, he's getting old now, as far as the series is concerned.
For Sebastian, that is, yes.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Well, AJ's been old for a long time. but Sebastian, I mean, these days it seems like to me you got to be about 21, 22, and by the time you're 26, you're done.
It almost seems that way. With McLaren coming into the series, how big of a deal is that for IndyCar?
That's funny you should ask. You would think with McLaren and their worldwide following, particularly obviously in England and it would generate some kind of interest. But I mean, I speak to my friends back in England all the time and talk about IndyCar, and they're just, half of them still don't even know what IndyCar is. So I'm hoping that the McLaren connection will generate some more interest there. But even the Formula One has lost interest in England as far as viewerships and mm-hmm. crowds, quite largely. I don't know why, whether it's the coverage or whether it's just the racing is not that exciting. But of course, the IndyCar racing is so exciting, and there's more overtaking on in one lap in IndyCar than there is in a season of Formula One. So, what's happened in England, or particularly in Europe these days, it seems to me that the saloon car or sports car
mm-hmm.
has taken over. And you can go, for a race weekend, $20 to the Silverstone or Brands Hatch, and you can watch three great races over the course of a weekend, and there's 30 cars involved, and there's lots of banging and crashing and spinning and punch-ups afterwards, and then everybody gets together and has a cup of tea and goes, okay, see you next weekend.
You know, there was two kind of F1 IndyCar renaissances, of course, is the mid-60s with Jimmy Clark and Graham Hill, Jochen Rent, who came over, Jackie Stewart, with Lola and Lotus and everything. There's a lot of crossover between the two. And then the second one was in the early 90s when you had Nigel Mania. You had Emerson Fittipaldi over here and several other drivers, and even, to a lesser amount, Mark Blundell and Guzman and those kind of guys. Is that something that we could be seeing again in the near future? Is this a way for maybe IndyCar to capitalize on that with F1 kind of in a, let's face it, Mercedes is just taking over the series. There's not a lot of, when you go into it, you're wondering, how much is Lewis Hamilton going to win by this week? Or, is Bottas going to be able to do something? Is this an opportunity for IndyCar to make a little bit of a move? Not to challenge F1, but just maybe siphon off a few of the fans?
It certainly is a great opportunity. Not to slam IndyCar, but when I was working with ESPN and Speed Channel and covering IndyCar, and at the time we were going to 110 nations, the international ESPN international feed. And we would speak to the director of the domestic show, the American show, and we would say, could we please see some more? I know they're at the back, but could we please see more of Mark Blundell and people like that, Mauricio Guzman? And of course, they said, no, the Americans aren't interested. And we kept saying, well, we're going to 100 and something countries, and all these people are very interested.
Mm-hmm.
And until you give them someone, they're not going to follow, I hate to say it, but they're not going to follow Marco Andretti or Hinchcliffe or people like that particularly, because they don't know them and they haven't seen them coming up through the ranks and coming over to America. I think obviously the Indianapolis 500 still has its mass appeal, but some of the other races just not. And of course, we've seen that domestically too. For example, the Milwaukee Mile, you know, where that race disappeared for a while, but it's still Milwaukee Mile is probably some of the best racing IndyCar ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, is that somebody? Does Marcus Ericsson or Alexander Rossi, who has Formula One experience? I mean, are there still fans out there that are kind of wondering, you know, let's see what they can do in IndyCar? Does that move the meter at all?
I think Alexander Rossi certainly does. Yes.
Okay.
I'm not so sure about Marcus Ericsson, but I mean, England in particular is such a racing nation. They can't get enough racing, whether it's Formula Ford on a local level at Alton Park in a rainy, windy, crappy afternoon, or whether it is Formula One. I mean, they're out to watch all forms of racing. And, of course, if they've got someone to root for, it makes a huge difference. And that's, you know, when, like you mentioned, Nigel Mansell, when he came over, at that point, the IndyCar ratings in England were higher than the Formula One ratings for quite some time. Unfortunately, a certain Mr. Eccleston didn't like it so much, and he pretty much had the kibosh put on the IndyCar coverage in Europe. There's plenty of viewers out there, and people follow, obviously, their local guy, and it's the same as if Aaron Rodgers was to go to some other team. I'm sure there'd be a bunch of Wisconsin people, just like when Brett Favre left, that follow Aaron Rodgers, not so much the Packers, you know.
All right, let's take a quick break here, Guy. We'll hold you over for one more segment here. When we come back, we'll be talking about some more news coming up in the IndyCars and what's coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Guy Hobbs. Guy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And this is one story in the IndyCar side that kind of intrigues me, and we talked about it a little bit last week, and that's Scott McLaughlin for the Australian Supercars driver, champion driver, in fact, with Team Penske, who tested with the captain at, I think it was either Sebring or Circuit of the Americas, very, very fast right off the bat. And now it looks like he's going to be running the Indianapolis Grand Prix. That's on the road course before the 500. And, Guy, that's a pretty interesting story. And as we said last week, you know, Penske doesn't do anything just on a whim. So he must have seen something in this driver, didn't he?
He's obviously seen something in him, or if Roger hasn't seen something in him, one of his men has seen something in him. But all the way back to where Roger picked out Mark Donohue back in 1969 or 1970 or something, he can spot talent. We know that. He's had Helio Castroneves for a number of years, and we've known he's very good. And he obviously, if he realizes if he doesn't have what he needs for IndyCar, Roger can give it to him, basically, and train him to become the next, hopefully, IndyCar champion.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with him. And, I just think, I love stories like this. I love seeing John, a kid that can go from one series to another almost seamlessly and be fast right off the bat.
In the old days, I talk about the old days, because drivers used to go from series to series to series,
sure.
Possibly in one weekend, even run two or three different series. Or in England, it's so small, they would possibly run one race on a Saturday at one track and a completely different track completely different car on the Sunday and just run between the two circuits. So now it's good to see these people coming from other disciplines and hopefully running more than just one discipline. It's got to the point where the drivers have now become, okay, this is what I drive. I don't drive anything else. And then we used to see a lot of them come and maybe do the 24 hours of Daytona or go over and do the 24 hours of Le Mans. But now they're even getting specific where they're not going to do those series either anymore.
And, Guy, it seems like we're getting...
One guy I'd really like to see in IndyCar would be Jordan Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would love to see him get an opportunity.
Guy, it seems like we're getting some drivers from Europe. Definitely IndyCar is getting interest from them. Is there any guys that you see this year that are going to maybe kind of surprise us, pop up, and maybe do something like what Colton Herta did last year?
From Europe, you're saying?
Well, you know, some of these new guys that are in the series.
Anybody at all, yeah, any of the rookies that are coming in.
Well, no, unfortunately not. There's no one that's standing out to me at one particular moment now. Years ago, there was a guy I picked called Hoover Orsi, and he had raced in the South American Formula 3 series, and he had dominated this series in not a dominating car. And at the time, I said, this kid's going to be the next Formula 1 star.
I think he won an Atlantic race at Milwaukee, didn't he?
He won an Atlantic race in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
He ended up becoming a Formula One test driver. I think it was for McLaren. And he obviously did something wrong, or he ran out of money, but he has basically gone back to farming in Argentina at this point. But he was, I had my eye picked on him. Another guy I had some years ago was he's a Dumillon, Jean-Philippe Dumillon or something. He was a French-Canadian driver in the IMSA series, and I thought he was fantastic. And I just found out the other day he's now running Canadian Cascar series.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I thought for sure he was going to go on to be. So I guess my picks aren't that good.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of drivers you see come up over the years. You think it's a can't miss, and I mean that's true with anything. You know, how many times have we seen a guy do well? You know, top guy in high school, he moves on to college, he does very well, but doesn't really make it in the pro level. And there's you know, whatever sport you're going into, you're gonna certainly follow that. I'm trying to think of a driver I thought that was going to be a can't miss, but one guy just popped into my head, and I know Guy will remember this one, was Mike Thackwell. He was a young British driver who was, everybody thought was going to be world champion, didn't they?
They certainly did, and of course he cleaned up in the British Formula 3. I think he started off at British Formula Ford, and he cleaned up in that series, and he did the British Formula 3 series, and he cleaned up on that. And you're right. Everybody thought this guy's going to go on to become world champion. I think the only time you read about Mike Thackwell now in England is if you get fish and chips and it's wrapped up in newspaper.
And he actually drove an IndyCar for Roger Penske for a race. I forget what track, but I think I want to say 84. This was after Mears got injured at San Air, and they were bringing in a multiple guys to replace them through the end of the year. But yeah, there's always a lot of drivers like that just kind of flame out, unfortunately.
Yes. And I don't know why it is that they flame out, whether it's they don't have the sponsorship, or of course you upset the wrong person and then you're just immediately out anyway.
Well, there's the politics too, Guy, isn't it? I mean, how important is that in especially in Europe, the politics of racing are so very important. And you look like a guy, you know, so many times we've had drivers that just for whatever reason weren't able to navigate the rough politics of the upper echelons of Formula One, isn't that true?
The politics is But the political games that go on are just incredible.
Tommy Byrne is one guy, right?
Well, He's a classic example of. But I think there might be slightly more to his story.
Yes, that's true, though.
He didn't help himself. Because Tommy Byrne, for those that don't know, he won the Indy Lights Championship twice, I believe. He won everything in Europe. He's written a great book, and he came over to America to make his fame and fortune. And actually, he had a test drive for Formula One, and he said the wrong thing to the wrong person, that person being Ron Dennis. And that was it. Ron Dennis told him there and then on the pit lane at Silverstone at the test, said, "You will never drive in Formula One ever again." And sure enough, he never did drive in Formula One ever again.
Yeah. His book...
He's still hanging on then. I speak to Tommy every now and again. He's still hanging on, still sort of involved in racing a little bit.
He's an instructor, I think, right? At Mid-Ohio? Well,
he's an instructor at the Mid-Ohio school, and he also does some side work for, I think, Porsche at various locations around the country as an instructor. When you get your new Porsche, and he shows you how to drive it
properly. Yes, Crash and Burn is the book. Go to Amazon.com. I highly, highly recommend it, especially.
It's one of those reads. It's one of those reads where you open up, you read the first page, and you go, "Well, no wonder the guy didn't make it." and then as you go on, it's like, "Oh my God, this." I mean, I worked with Tommy for a number of years, and I knew him I've known him for years. And half the stuff I did not know until I read the book. And when I read the book, I was like, "Oh my gosh!"
Crash and Burn is the book, and it's Burn like his last name, BYRNE, and then D. Crash and Burn. Get the book. Just a chapter on him racing open wheel cars in Mexico is worth the price of admission for that book. It's incredible the stuff that was going on down there. So yeah, make sure. You check that out. It's a good read. So, Guy, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to chatting with you again.
Thank you for having me on. It was my pleasure.
All right.
And if anyone feels like coming up to Elkhart Lake, bring a shovel.
Thank you. That was Guy Hobbs on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next, we're going to have three questions with Larry next on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zotke, along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, John Wiedemann, joining me in studio from RacingNation.com. And we were talking during the break amongst ourselves about the stinker of a race last night at Vegas, which was actually not bad from like third place throughout the field. But at the pointy end of the field, it was kind of boring because you had Kyle Busch in the race, who says he's not going to run in the lower series anymore, but I like I said, the hometown boy running Vegas, I guess that's okay. If they want to see the hometown boy stink up the race, that's fine. And then we got some news this morning, don't we, Jeff?
Yeah, Kevin Harvick sent out a tweet and said, "I'd like to make this fun. I'll put up a $50,000 bounty for any full-time cup driver who races a truck and can beat Kyle Busch in his next four races." And then you had Marcus Lemonis.
Yes.
He has matched it. So now
Camping World CEO.
Now it's a $100,000 bounty for any full-time cup driver that can beat Kyle Busch in his next four truck races.
Wouldn't you want to have a regular – John, wouldn't that be better if we just had a full-time truck series driver? Wouldn't it be better?
Yeah.
I mean,
they're the ones that need the money.
Right. I mean, why give a cup guy more money? Let's get Larry Janicek on this, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Larry, should that money go to a full-time series truck driver, or should it be a cup guy?
Well, I'm just thinking as a promoter, I think that would be better if it was a cup guy, because it would gather more interest for the race in that that manner.
See, this is why we have Larry on the show.
Thanks.
It makes sense.
I know he's going to race at he's going to race a truck at California, I believe, but I can't remember where the other three tracks are. I know one of them is not Phoenix, which that would have been a great place if they could have got Larson a ride there.
Yeah, that would be good to see. Yeah, I think Larson. That'd be interesting to see Larson do it. I'd love to see Larson do it,
yeah,
or even
for sure.
But you know, Christopher Bell, you know, he's a full time.
Yeah, he's full time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. No, that's another great one.
Yeah, but he's not going to get one of Kyle's trucks.
No, he's not.
No. But he could sure gather a good one up from somebody, I would think.
Well, it has to be a Toyota, though.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting. So let's play three questions with Larry. Hit me with the first one, Larry. What do you got?
Okay, here you go. You guys did a great job covering a lot of the Daytona stuff really well and with the guests you had, but I've got one here. Do you think that this was heard in the Roush camp when they got back to Livonia? What's Matt Kenseth's phone number and his availability? You think there was any thought about Matt having Matt come back and drive for Ryan Newman while he's out?
No, he would want too much money. They're looking for somebody cheap.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You know, especially after that crash, too. You don't think the wife would have something? I mean, I texted this to somebody later in the week. I said, there's a lot of Cup Series wives having some very serious talks with some drivers. And especially when you look at Jimmy Johnson, you don't think Jimmy Johnson wouldn't rather just pull off right now and just say, I'm done. I'm out of here.
I believe so. Yeah. For the kind of money he's made, he doesn't need to stick around for, you know, an extra $20 million. I think he's wanting to do it to say goodbye to the fans the right way.
But that Kenseth thought is a good one, especially with them racing at Vegas this week. That would have been a good guy to put in the car.
That would have been.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very good thought. And I think he left there on pretty good grounds, didn't he?
Yeah, because the team was kind of in a decline, and he was going to, you know, Toyota was, you know, the better team. I mean, it made sense. And I think he was probably at the time a little bit underpaid anyway. So, all right, question two, Larry.
Okay. How are you going to handle this phone call this afternoon? Four or five big mogul guys from Hollywood calling you because you know a lot about racing, and they tell you, you know, that Ford versus Ferrari movie went over really big, brought in a lot of money, got a couple of Academy Awards. What's the next thing in motorsports, driver, race, team, or whatever that we should make a movie about? What would it be?
There's a lot of good stories out there. There's been some discussions. There is one of them was talking to, and you'd have to do a lot of CGI, obviously, but the CGI is getting better, is a board track racing in the 20s. It doesn't necessarily have to be a racing movie, but it could be a good story put in that genre of racing in that. And, you know, as long as they don't, the problem is you don't want to go too CGI. There was that World War One movie they made, it turned into a video game. They did a real crappy job on it about 5-6 years ago on World War One Aviation. They really, I'm trying to think of the name of it, but it was a stupid name too. But anyways, no, there's a lot of good stories. I mean, look, even in the not too far, well, I guess it's been 50 years, but somebody like Jim Herterby's kind of overcoming the odds situation. A guy got burned here in Milwaukee in 1964, was able to come back and win on the NASCAR circuit and also win back at the track he got burned at and be able to do something that, you know, people said he wouldn't be able to do. Alex Zanardi is another one. Just any of the drivers, a story of the overcoming odds situation, you know, I think would be good. Jeff, do you have any that kind of come to mind?
No, I just hope that there's more. And, you know, Ford versus Ferrari was fantastic and, you know, wildly entertaining. And I think that it deserved more awards than it got. So I just hope they make more and they're not as stupid as that Sylvester Stallone one.
Sure.
So no Driven 2?
No, thanks. I'll pass.
Days of Thunder 2?
No, that one was awful as well.
Days of Thunder could have been very, very well.
It could have been great, but, you know, I watched it, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, and that movie did not age well at all. No. It's an absolute joke.
I saw, there's a movie like that I saw the other couple of weeks ago. I watched it, and I really liked it. I hadn't seen it in 20 years. I'm like, whoa, this thing has not aged well at all.
I mean, they're doing Top Gun. A new version of Top Gun.
I saw the trailer.
They could do another version of Days of Thunder.
The trailer looked pretty wild, but then again, you know, the thing you have to worry about a trailer is maybe those are good parts.
It's a one-minute trailer movie.
So.
Yeah.
Well, here's my prediction on that, Larry. There are going to be several racing films made, and they're probably going to be bad, unfortunately.
I liked your suggestion of Zanardi because it covers a lot of, you know, he was in Formula One. He's a European.
Uh-huh.
That's a great story. And he's done so many great things since the accident. I think that would be a really good one.
Who do you play him? Who do you have play him?
Oh, gosh.
Somebody.
I have
Sylvester
no idea.
Stallone.
No. We just went through that.
All right, Larry, what else do you got?
Okay, here's the third one. What do these companies have in common? K-Seal, Tenda, L-I-U-N-A, Liuna, Hallmar, and Champion.
I have no
idea. It has to deal with racing.
The only one, Hallmar sounds like wasn't that the helmet maker in the 60s?
That was that, he was inducted in the Sprint Car Hall of Fame and he was involved in helmets. No, all five of them were big time sponsors on the trucks that ran at Daytona.
Yeah, that
Champion was actually on the winning truck. And the strange thing is, I knew nothing of any of them other than Hallmar. A couple of years ago, I looked them up because they were sponsoring, and they still do, the kid for the really good dirt modified driver, Friesen.
Okay.
And so all of these companies, they were very prominent sponsors on the trucks. In fact, Tenda was on Johnny Sauter's.
Okay.
Truck. And I just was really surprised that, first of all, they all are kind of smaller companies, and yet they have the money or whatever. I was kind of surprised that those type of companies were sponsoring big time on the truck series. And with this LIUNA, they're actually a labor union in Canada. I just thought it was kind of interesting. And Champion, that was on the winning truck, is actually a competitor of Generac that makes the standby generators in Waukesha County.
Well, it was kind of nice at the Daytona 500 with the 88 car of Alex Bowman seeing the Valvoline on there. It was like seeing an old friend again because these sponsors, you know, back in the day, it was a big thing. I remember in the late 80s, you had some companies, non-traditional companies, come in like Crisco and Red Baron Pizza, and that was kind of a big thing. But you knew the product, and now you're seeing so many business-to-business sponsors in racing. In fact, I would say that's the majority of them right now, or just, you know, business-to-business companies that are involved in racing. And it's you know, I that's why it was kind of nice seeing Valvoline, because, you know, I said last week about the accessory decals disappearing off the fenders of the cars. But, you know, and that that classic look of Bowman's car looked good. I liked the colors of Valvoline and that back in the day. And, you know, think back to Neil Bonnet and some of the other drivers that drove those cars. You know, it's you don't see that too often anymore, Larry, don't you?
Right. Yeah. That K-Seal, they're involved in chemicals for stopping leaks in radiator systems. Tenda, when I looked it up, the first company that came up was not the Tenda that was actually on the car. It had this Tenda on the car. It had a really special insignia on it and the way they wrote it. And they make horse care products.
Oh, like mane and remember mane and tail, on Bobby Allison's car? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Tenda with a T, right? T as in Tom?
Tenda, yeah. And it's a kind of artist-like tea. It's not the normal tea.
Okay.
Yeah. In Hallmar, they're heavy civil engineering contractors contractor management. They're $50 to $100 million a year a company, and they're really big with Friesen in the trucks, and then they sponsor his dirt modified out east. And like I said, that Champion is a competitor of Generac. So it's kind of interesting as the companies that see their way into sponsoring. Evidently, they all have their own ideas as to why they're putting their money into it.
It certainly is. Well, Larry, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show and looking forward to chatting with you next week again, please.
Okay, Z-Man, take care.
All right, that was Larry Janicek in the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
When we come back, we're going to talk with John Wiedemann from RacingNation.com coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, Great Lakes Dragway is closed this weekend as they are at the car show down at State Fair Park. But they have been open the last 2 weeks for their winter drags with the snowmobiles. And when they're open, their gift store is open. So that's where you can get your 2020 season tickets also there. So make sure you stay up on their Facebook page. And they'll let you know when they'll be open again at the track. And lots of stuff coming up this year. They got the Anarchy No Prep drags on the weekend of June 13th. You got the Midwest Truck Invasion once again in July. And just all sorts of good stuff. The vintage drags too. Memorial Day and Labor Day weekend. Just a lot of fun at Great Lakes Dragway. Joining us in studio, of course, is John Wiedemann, RacingNation.com. What's the latest at RacingNation.com?
We're just getting the season fired up. I mean, we got Dennis Krause, the Madison Dennis.
One of the nicest guys, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got his Motorsports Minute, so we got that every single day. And then he's talking about ramping that up a little bit and doing maybe a little bit longer segments. So look for that kind of coming up pretty soon. Once the racing season hits here a little bit more. Then we got, covering the races as they go along. Got Joe Jennings was just out at Daytona. Joe's doing good.
The hardest working guy in racing.
Yes. Yeah. So it's awesome to have him out there. And then, like you're talking, Eddie Lapine will always have some interesting stuff. And on the road with Eddie and seeing where he's going and what he's doing and what's going on in the life of Eddie. That's always interesting.
And the fantastic photography of Jack Webster.
Yeah, Jack's got some awesome photography.
Looking through my notes here, I printed like 300 pages this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, cut down a bunch of trees. Daniel Suarez, of course, misses Daytona in the 96 car, and this week in Las Vegas. What is redemption for Daniel Suarez, Jeff?
Top 15.
Oh, that'd be like a win, I think.
Yeah.
Just run all day, I'm thinking.
You know, he's got to make... if he wants to even try, you know, to get his name back up there, he's got to make one hell of a statement tomorrow. And for me, that's top 15.
Yeah, just running in the 20s he's just going to fade away at that point.
Yep. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't finish the season if he just runs in the 20s all year.
What about Ross Chastain?
He's already been quick.
What if he wrecks?
We probably will.
He wrecks a lot. Now, Ricky Stenhouse got into the doghouse for doing that. That's another reason why, I mean, I understand your point earlier, Jeff, about who else is there. But it's interesting, let's face it, you know, Stenhouse is in the 47 because he was wrecking a lot of cars.
Right.
And that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember talking to, Racing Nation was on a couple NASCAR cars back in the day. And I remember talking to Corey Stott, and he was telling me when he had his team in the Xfinity Series, and it was like, it was cheaper for them to buy a new chassis than to replace a front clip.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was cheaper for them to buy used rolling chassis than to have it repaired.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
I mean, it's just there's a lot of money involved, you know, especially for and it seems like it's worse if you're at the bottom end of the field, because a lot of these with the bigger teams in that, they have all that stuff in house. But if you're a smaller team, you know, they're talking about Timmy Hill with his Cup Series. It was kind of cool last night with him running that 56 truck, him making the race and everything. But, if he didn't make the 500, they were going to shut the doors down. And so, you know, when they wreck a car in that, it can be catastrophic, because there's just, for one thing, there's not a lot of options for them. And the options there are, they're quite pricey, aren't they?
But, like I said, Ross has been running. He was in the top 10, I think, in both practices. I mean, if he keeps his nose clean, he could be the next Alex Bowman and he work himself into a ride.
Exactly, and I think he needs to redeem himself from Daytona. I mean, let's face it, that was an asinine move he made. And I think if he runs all day, gets a top, especially a top 10, be competitive and shows that maturity. There was a situation last night in the truck race with Lessard, who's running for Kyle Busch. They're going into turn 3-4 wide. He backed out. He, the rookie, who's only raced in, I think, 7 truck series races, he's the one that showed, let's hold on. Let's just
be smart about
this.
Be
smart. And, let's race another lap.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he definitely can't get into another wreck. And this is one of them tracks where there's so many different racing grooves, and it's very racy, and you can sit there and race yourself into trouble when you're going 4 wide. At the speeds that they're going out in Vegas. So it's not going to be easy for him, but like you said, John, he's shown speed so far this weekend, and a lot of stuff got rained out today, including Cup qualifying, but he definitely needs to keep defenders on.
Who's the guy we're looking for tomorrow in the Cup Series? Who's the guy who you think is, I mean, we go into Phoenix, it's Kevin Harvick, you know, Daytona, going back to Daytona, Denny Hamlin, his third win, he's right up there. I mean, he's not going to catch Richard Petty.
Right.
But, I mean, he's right up there. Next guy is with 4 wins, I have it on here somewhere in my notes. You know, he could be, I mean, that really pushes him up now for Daytona 500 wins. That's kind of impressive. But it's interesting. Richard Petty excelled at Daytona. Can you really say that about Denny Hamlin?
Well, you know,
he's not a dominant Daytona driver, but he puts himself in a good position, doesn't he, John?
Mm-hmm. He's there at the end. I mean, that's the biggest thing to get there at the end. I mean, it's just like I was complaining about before. You know, like so many different pools, it probably doesn't really matter. I'm going to get somebody that's going to do good or not do good, but. You know, I got Keselowski, and it's like, oh, he's doing pretty good. And then Logano pushes whoever into Keselowski, and boom, he's in the wall and done. You know, somehow Hamlin's been able to be there all these times and then to win 3 out of 5 races. That's pretty amazing at this point, the way they're racing.
Well, and 2 of his wins were the closest 2 Daytona finishes ever. So, you know, he's definitely not dominating. He's getting by, you know, the hair of his nose and all that. But but he's getting it done. And you get three Daytona 500 wins, you're in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think it really matters what Denny does the rest of his career. He's walking into the Hall when he's done.
Does Kyle Busch have, or Kurt Busch, does he have an opportunity to finally win Vegas?
No. Not legitimate.
I don't know. You never know with that guy.
You know,
he looks like a Ford weekend, actually.
He comes out of the woodwork every, you know, like twice a year. And I don't see Kurt getting it done. Him and Kyle haven't really had good luck at their home track.
It was interesting. They had a graphic, and Kurt Busch is 20 years in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Busch, 16.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Is it a time fly?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Because Kurt Busch had his first NASCAR win at Milwaukee.
Yeah.
In a Roush truck in 1999.
Well, you remember when he just dominated Bristol year after year after year in that Sharpie car. Yep. You know, you were going to Bristol and you just knew, there's Kurt Busch.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you like this weekend, Jeff?
I'm going to go with Blaney. I think he's gonna get it done. Yeah, a little redemption. But William Byron needs to bounce back from his last place finish at the 500 as well.
So mad at that. That was my pick.
Yeah, that was your pick.
Taking out so early.
That's what I'm saying. You make these like fantasy drives interest in these sports, right? So if you're doing fantasy racing at Daytona, it's just you're probably not going to get anything out of it.
Who do you like this weekend?
I'll take Eric Amarola. I'll take a flyer on him.
I'll take Byron again. What the heck?
Yeah, why not?
Although I kind of agree with you. It could be a Ford weekend, though.
What about all those Toyotas getting penalized?
Yeah.
You know, all had Bondo and stuff like that trying to cheat a little bit. But, you know, they when they finally hit the track for practice, they weren't quick, but that won't, you know.
Well, that's the thing, though, too. By race time. When you can check it that close, it just creates that much more problems.
Holding penalties.
Thank you for everybody who came on the show. Guy Hobbs, Dennis Michelson, Eddie Lapine, everybody, thank you so much. John, thank you for making the
trip. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it was fun,
the help,
John.
Especially me fighting a little bit of the winter sickness here. We'll talk to you next week on the Final Inspection Show.
Thanks, Sparky.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.